So good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody to this week's IMGD speaker series. We're very fortunate to have Keith Zizza here. He has been a professional audio designer since 1991 and has worked for more than 13 years exclusively in audio for video games on more than 25 AAA titles. Most recently as audio director for SimCity Societies by a small company called Electronic Arts. Caesar 4 by View Games and Children of the Nile for Tilt and Mill right here in Massachusetts. He's known for his work on the classic multi-platinum selling city building series of games from Sierra, including Pharaoh, Caesar, Zeus, Cleopatra, and Poseidon. And without further ado, here's Keith Zizza.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for having me here today. It's a real pleasure, and I'd like to talk to you today about designing an audio engine. A little bit about maybe a kind of a case study, if you will, from the ground up of how we're going to approach designing an engine for games. There's so many options, and we'll get into that with a little bit of an introduction first and say, who is this guy? And Rob kind of had a good intro there. The audio director for Tilted Mill Entertainment, which is also chief cook and bottle washer, composer, sound designer. And at Tilted Mill, we've worked with many different companies. Electronic Arts is kind of our flagship title, SimCity Societies, and Caesar 4 for Sierra, Children of the Nile, and a couple of independent releases we had on Steam, Hinterland, which is kind of a fantasy RPG, and Mosby's Confederacy, which is a Civil War real-time strategy game. Before that, I worked at a company called Impressions, which is part of VU Games Sierra, which I think is Activision now, but in any case, worked on a couple dozen titles there. Among others were the city-building series, Pharaoh and Cleopatra, Zeus, Poseidon, and so forth, as Robert mentioned. So today, I was going to talk about kind of four main topics. The role of an audio director in games. We should probably start there. A brief discussion of some of the technologies that exist currently, what we also call middleware for games. And then getting to creating an audio engine in general, and I'll give the case study of Children of the Nile, which is our first independent release at Tilted Mill Entertainment. And I think the best way to see it is through the case study, because you can really see it from the ground up there. So let's talk just briefly about the role of the audio director in games. In a game company, and this is in no particular order, this is kind of random, there are all different departments. Where I'm primarily concerned is programming, art, and myself and audio. The three of us together really kind of put the meat and potatoes together, along with the design, production, and writing groups. There's also, you get your IT group, making sure all our PCs are working, the QA folks and testing, our webmaster or webmasters. And at the very top is actually getting the thing published, which is the business department and legal department and development and so forth. Each one of the people on that tier have their various roles. And as audio director, there's a lead composer, a sound designer. These may be people that are in-house, as part of the staff, or they may be contracted out. It's comprised of sound designers, composers. It could be junior composers, sound designers, assistants, and interns. It really depends on the level of the project. Sometimes it's only one person, and I'll have to kind of do everything on a small project that only lasts a few months or even a few weeks, such as an expansion pack for a game. In some cases, like with SimCity Societies, we almost had 2 years to work on it, so there are quite a few people involved. In that, the audio director has a lot of accountability, just like the art director or the programming director. There are three main categories, which is music, sound, and dialogue. And within those, there are so many different things you have to think about. A lot of aesthetic and technical considerations. And here you can see your music. You've got to have some kind of stylistic direction. And there's the composing and editing, and finally mastering, or having your finished product, your two-track stereo equivalent that you could have a CD of, which is a job in itself. The sound design, again, there are some stylistic concerns, creating sounds and which ones you would choose off the shelf from a CD library that exists, or you may need to do some field recording, go out with a recorder and record the sounds of whatever it is that you really need in the game, mostly environmental types of things. Foley, which is named after Jack Foley, who is a person who designed sounds from scratch in kind of the old-time cartoons. You see people, with an air raid siren cranking it or something, or they're walking in crushed gravel for footsteps. That's what Foley is. And then editing and mastering those pieces of work. And the dialogue, which involves a lot of external people, depending on the size of the script, you have various actors, and you have to cast them, get the right group of people or ensemble to work together, and then record and edit them, master that work, polish it up, and localize the work, which means you have to translate, have that work translated in several languages depending on the scope of the release. In the case of SimCity, it was the biggest localization project ever because we not only had to do what we call EFIG, which is English, French, Italian, German, and Spanish, it's a little buzzword we use, but we also had to have simplified Chinese, Mandarin, Korean, Japanese, and I can't always qualify that work, so that involves an expert in being able to look at scripts and qualify that work for me, and I have to really trust that person to make sure that what is actually being said is correct. It's a little more forgiving in SimCity because it's Simlish, which isn't quite anything, but yes?
So it seems like you'd have to do that whole pipeline for every language, is that right? The whole dialogue part, you have to do casting.
That's correct, yeah.
So localizing isn't just this thing you do at the end, it's like...
Yeah. Right. Oh, no. Well, a lot of the casting, recording, and editing, and mastering, and so forth, the hope is that, my native language, English, that's what we can do here, but we often have to hire, depending again on scope and external localization. Correct, but I'd say a good chunk of the work is usually, on my end. And I will sometimes have to do the steps of editing and mastering with a script if no one else is available to do it or if there's time constraints, with the hope that, if it's not a language that I can interpret visually or know, that I can at least find the takes and put them through the right kind of processing and get that done. So it can be a real can of worms if it's not done correctly. So I'll give you a brief discussion of the game audio technology that exists right now. This is by no means a definitive list, but it's certainly there are four. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. There are about four or five different groups of middleware that exist, and middleware is kind of a, I don't want to say canned technology, but it's something that's already made for you in order for the audio engineer or engineers and programmers to just kind of dig into right away without having to reinvent something from scratch. It's kind of like you don't want to create a 3D engine from scratch necessarily. Why reinvent the wheel? You can use an engine that already is really good, like the Havok engine or another type of physics engine. Middleware is the same thing, but just for audio. And within middleware, there are things that it can take care of for you, such as file management, manipulating music within the game or sound to take different paths depending on the type of events that occur or something that you may do as a player. And you can actually script some of those things in some of the more complex middleware. You can do the same with voice as well. Most of them have some kind of, I should say all of them have, some kind of environmental processing. So if you were to enter a dark cave or something, you can actually apply real-time effects like reverb or echo or anything that you can imagine in real time using the PC's processor rather than having a specific sound that's been processed in one way. So that sound could vary depending on whether you're in a phone booth or whether you're in a gymnasium. You can apply those effects in real time. Most of the time, there's a hybrid of these two things. The second being the custom programming. There's always something in the package that isn't quite what you want. It almost works. So a programmer often, in my cases anyway, in the past, have put little add-ons in for things where we may want to do some more advanced scripting, and they may create tools for me from scratch, particularly timing particular sounds. Certain 3D programs such as Max or Maya now have certain protocols for the way sounds are timed to animations. It may be over a period of real time where somebody's moving and it's looking at it in real time. When that foot hits the ground, there's a footstep. Or it may be something that is called a keyframe, which is a very specific frame that a sound is triggered at. And if the game speed is increased, you know, you have to make sure that those things, that the sounds line up or slow down, that the sounds still line up with that footstep. So sometimes it doesn't always work with the middleware, and we have to create some custom tools for that. And there may be some advanced things like a dialogue, where there may be a conversation taking place, and I want the conversation to change depending on what one person says and another person's response and so forth. And those, you're getting real customized now. I may need more advanced database support to manage. You know, what if I have thousands of sounds and my middleware doesn't have any kind of file management system? And as an audio director, it is always a good thing to know some kind of scripting language like C#, XML, or Lua is another popular one that World of Warcraft uses a lot, and some other popular games. Hard coding is just again, the programmer just having to do some really rough and tumble maneuvers in C++ or even an assembler to get things going. And I sometimes don't always have the best debug tools, so there may be something custom that the programmers have created for a feature in the game, and we need a customized tool that I can plug in, hit a hotkey, test the sound in a particular situation, or kind of pass that work on to some testers who can qualify that work for me. So there are more engines than this, but here are the four, I would say, the most popular ones for middleware or audio engines that are out there. Miles is the one I've used the most. It's part of the RAD game tools. And this was one of the first, actually, to incorporate various platforms. The great thing about the audio middleware is that often it replaces or it provides a shell for the operating system. So if I'm working on PlayStation 3 or an Xbox or a PC or a Mac or a different platform, I don't have to worry about, it's an abstraction, I don't have to worry about, is that code going to work on this platform? It's already going to take care of it for me. And that's a really big, big plus if you think you're going to have a game that's going to be ported over to a different platform. But Miles was one of the first ones to do it. It kind of has this tacked-on feeling because it's just been appended to over the last 13, 14 years or so. But it is very effective and works on just about every platform there is, even mobile phones. I mean, it's pretty comprehensive. Microsoft has one called the Exact, which is the cross-platform audio creation tool. But that's primarily for the Xbox, and it handles a lot of features that are very specific to the Xbox. Unfortunately, it doesn't work with any other platform.
But it's gone cross-platform.
That's right. just for Microsoft, of course.
Are there
Microsoft, and Microsoft. I know, I don't understand it either. Audio Kinetic, this is probably my up-and-coming favorite, they have a product called WISE. Some people call it WISE, but it's mostly known as WISE, which is the WaveWorks Interactive Sound Engine. This actually takes a lot of the scripting language that may be needed for very tricky pathing for sounds or dialogue depending on certain events, and actually allows me as the sound designer or composer to script it myself without having to type any kind of scripting language per se. It's more of a high level abstraction, and they have tools for the programmer who can kind of link all that stuff together with me as well. And FMod is, I would say, it's one of the more recent entries around the time just before WISE came out. And FMod is another great middleware tool. They have something called FMod Designer, which is similar to WISE. It's not as in-depth, but it's a very robust engine. Again, this is cross-platform, not so much like Microsoft, but cross-platform like Miles and WISE is. There's also another one not on here, which is the Unreal Engine, which is quite popular. Obviously, it was used for Unreal, but it can be used for other things. And they have a similar object control linking sounds directly to objects in a world, much like WISE does, which is pretty cool. But again, this is just a brief overview to let you know that there are engines that do exist. Yes?
So two questions about engines.
Yeah.
So I assume they each have a development time and there's a runtime component.
That's correct.
Separate. And how about the interface, you mentioned the interface with platforms, how about the interface with game engines? So if you're using a particular game engine, these come with interfaces to the game engine?
You mean in offline development or for
both, actually?
Yeah. Well, primarily, they have kind of an offline set of tools that I can use, and the program can use, which is called the SDK, the Software Development Kit. But in terms of real time gaming,
Quick question: does it matter? Let's say your game is being built in some commercial engine,
right?
Unreal or any whatever it is.
Yeah.
Does it matter which commercial engine you're using in terms of choosing which audio tool you're going to use?
And tools in the sense of like.
Like at runtime. You mean at runtime?
Well, if you choose a game engine, use the game engine to develop your levels at development time, and then, of course, at runtime, the engine is running.
Right.
And I'm just wondering whether there's what the interface is in terms of, well, if you have a level, you have some level editor with your game engine.
Oh, that's
And obviously, the sounds need to be related to all the objects in the level editor.
That's correct.
So, is that API? What's the status of those APIs?
Well, it all has to be. I think it all has to be consistent in terms of, if you're going to use the Unreal Engine, you should have that installed on the computer you're working with to edit sounds for levels and so forth. In terms of real time,
so does a tool have certain tools say it's already set up to work with this game engine?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the ones you talked about are running multi-platform, but also you could use for different game engines.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Last question about something like actually it's the cost for like students and
universities.
Are these all very expensive or?
They all have different plans. I'm not sure what Microsoft is doing these days. They always seem to be changing it. There may be some sort of educational discount. WISE actually is doing something really great because if you don't mind signing some non-disclosure agreements and things. They actually have an educational, the whole section on their website about it, and they have presentations an instructor can give and talk about the engine. They have tutorials and exercises that are provided. I think it's up and coming, one of the best. They get it in terms of educating students and people before they actually get into the industry, because a lot of times you have to learn this kind of like on the seat of your pants, and your pants are on fire, and you don't know what's going to happen, And it's sad but true, but WISE actually is forthcoming in terms of that. FMOD has some tutorials online, but nothing as big as WISE. And MILES doesn't really have anything. You just have to get into it. But it is you don't pay for it. It's free until you publish the game, in which case you pay tens of thousands of dollars and so forth.
And how about open source? Is that OpenAL? Any of that stuff serious?
MILES... I'm 99.9% sure you can do all the OpenAL stuff, no problem. I'm not sure of the other three at this point, but it's a great question. Yes?
Why do you need these? I mean, like, if I was, for instance, going to work with the Source Engine or the Unreal Engine, I'm going to take sound, I'm going to tie it either to objects or to a script that's going to trigger it during a certain time or something happens in the game. Why would I need a separate API like this when I'm just am I doing more than that in a game besides tying sound to either events or objects?
Yeah, well, most of the time, if you're creating a game, you're a game company, you're creating a game from scratch, starting from the ground up, you've got a great 3D engine you've just bought. You don't want to reinvent the wheel. Now you're going to think about your audio. Well, unless you're going to have something that plugs right into, say, the Unreal Engine, that just happens to come with the graphics component and the audio component interwoven.
So some of these don't come with any audio components at all, these engines that you might buy from a company?
For 3D stuff, you mean? Yeah, you've got to make that decision. These are complete abstractions, with the exception of the Unreal Engine, because it's all kind of encapsulated in this big world of tools. And Unreal happens to have audio in conjunction with their video, which is a very smart idea. These four here are completely independent of any 3D engine of any kind. They will plug into to whatever you have, like, if you're using DirectX, if you're using some sort of other, other engine, but at a very abstract level. It's up to the programmer to hook those things up, hook the sounds up. So if you've got a conical projection happening in a 3D world and you want a sound to, like a particle effect, a waterfall is flowing somewhere in the environment, and you've got to tie, there are graphic particles that are coming down, and those are what we call emitters that are coming out. Well, I can actually tie a sound to those emitters or particles, or a single point within that kind of little sphere, if you will. And using one of these engines, they will have some sort of little nugget functions or code or what have you that I can plug in or tell the programmer I need this plugged into this particle here or this element here. But again, you're on your own with these in terms of integrating it with your graphics engine. But it's another great question. Yes?
I would say most engines come with some audio, just like they come with some physics.
Yes.
And so what you do is, if that audio that it comes with is good enough for what you're doing, they might just be panning, right?
So right. Well, most of it is comparable to what the old direct sound used to be. Most engines do have really basic, volume level, panning information, and projection information and so forth. But these, I'm talking about getting into real-time processing effects. First-person shooter is a great example where the room you're in is always changing. You may be in a pipe running through a tunnel or in a big open space, and those other 3D engines, with the exception of Unreal, probably don't have a lot of that intense processing information and certainly can't optimize the processor
to. It's like a level of expressiveness, like a physics engine.
Exactly.
Some physics, but if you want really good physics.
Has changed the reflection of a room. If I'm in a tight room with shooting my gun and it sounds one way, and I go into either a larger space or outdoors, now it's going to have a different level of reflection with reverb or whatever. Is that going to happen here?
Yes, yes, it is.
Okay,
yes.
So dynamically you can change the processing of the wave after.
Absolutely, yeah. You want to, if you know you're going to have environmental effects, the audio engineer will create the sounds as dry as possible without any kind of treatment on them whatsoever. And then putting it into a 3D world, what should happen, he said, knock on wood, is that I will be able to link that sound to the environment that I'm in, as projected in the environment I'm in, and the physics should all work together. But again, I'm coming at it from the creative side, and I'm leaving that to the programmers to really, worry about those issues. Although I will work with them and know if it's not coming out correctly. If that answers your question.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, most of the ones you saw there, there's always something that doesn't quite fit what you want to do, and there's no possible way you can do it. So there's always some custom programming that you can attach that's involved to it. In the case of Children of the Nile, which I'm going to get to later, that pretty much had to happen from scratch with the Miles engine, which is probably the most basic engine that has some really cool processing, and it can handle a lot of levels or layers of sound within a game in real time. But it doesn't have a lot of that advanced scripting that goes on that I need for decision making, which sounds to play at what time and so forth. So that had to be all done from scratch. And let me just talk a little bit about creating an audio engine in general, kind of from scratch. So obviously we've got our three categories, music, sound, and dialogue, which is the easiest way to think of the three main components within the game. What are we going to do? I've got this game. I've got to create music, sound, and dialogue. I have 6 months. Where do I begin? There are thousands of things that you have to think about, for better or worse. And again, that you saw this before, where I'm accountable for all of these things here as the audio director. Each one of those has generally aesthetic and technical considerations. And what are those? Really, just real quick overview here. If you're talking about music, you really have to think of the aesthetics is it going to be upbeat, sedate in the background? Do we want the music to be supercharged? Is this a adrenaline pumping type of game? Is it a more sedate, serene type of game? Are there going to be lots of short vignettes or pieces of music? Or are we going to have a three-hour epic soundtrack? You could say the same thing about sound. Is the sound palette or style going to be really edgy, smooth, or maybe you want a little more organic, like earthy, or maybe it's in the future, you want an industrial? They seem like obvious things, questions to ask, but you really need to think about them in depth because it's going to have an impact, just like the art director has to think about a style guide. I often think of an audio style guide to coincide and work well with what's going on with art. And we can say the same thing about the soundscape in general. Is it going to be serene, cacophonous, sounds all over the place, seasonal? You have to think there may be seasons in the game, which happens quite a bit in some of the real-time simulations. Is the dialogue style going to be over the top? People being overly dramatic, you know, the William Shatner type of delivery, or is it going to be, you know, all business matter of fact? Are there going to be a lot of characters? Are there going to be men, women, kids? You've got to think of all these things ahead of time. Will they have accents? You know, in a game I did called Caesar, everybody had British accents. Why are there Romans, you know, who spoke Latin speaking in British accents? Well, it was kind of a pop culture decision that we made that a lot of the great British movies that had Romans in them really seemed to have a connection or an impact with kind of at least American pop culture. And it seemed to go over really well, so we just kept doing it over the years and really got humorous with it. But accents are another thing. Ancient Egypt, we had to come up with a way to kind of pull you in aesthetically. And we said, well, if we give everybody accents in whatever language it is, you know, if it's English and we gave them kind of this, you know, Middle Eastern accent, it can be kind of odd sounding, but it does pull you in a little bit to the environment of the game because that's what we're used to seeing in a movie with, you know, that would be in our language, in English. And the pacing. Sometimes we need really snappy delivery of files, sometimes of the audio for voices. Sometimes we want something very, you know, laid back and slow. It may also depend on the amount of file size and disk space, real estate you have, if you have to speed files up or slow them down. And the technical considerations. Is the music going to be kind of... is it going to be really interactive depending on the decisions you make in the game and never-ending and bobbing and weaving all different ways? Or is it going to be linear like a jukebox mode? Will we use files that are what we used to call direct music library files back in the day, which are interactive kind of MIDI files? MP3s or OGGs, which is a ZIFF.org file protocol that actually... I think rivals MP3. There are so many file formats to choose from. What's the file size going to be? The big footprint for our data, the total time of the files, and so forth. Are there going to be scenario-based considerations, goal-based considerations? How many areas are there going to be that need sound? And what are the different modes? Are there going to be user interfaces? Cutscenes, in-game sounds, and this is where I really have to work with a game designer to figure out, you know, the different kinds of modes in the game that we'll talk about a little bit coming up. And this is just a quick list of the number of layers of sound. We may have music, ambience, dialogue, buildings may make sounds, figures may make their own sounds, and all of these things have to come together. And we don't want it to sound like a complete mess. It's easy to do. But we also want to have enough sounds going on that it's busy and seems convincing, at least in the case of my typical role, which is the city building type of games. We want a kind of convincing ambience created from all these individual sounds. And then I talk a little bit about dialogue here. Again, how many files we're going to have, the sizes, the time of day. You know, maybe there are things that people are saying good evening and good morning, and I may want them to be quieter, and we may want to have things change, the types of files changing at night versus the types of files, voice files you hear in the morning. Again, number of languages, as we talked about earlier. What is the length of the scripts? How many do I need? Are there going to be streaming voices? It may just be one person talking at any one time. There may be 50 people talking. It depends on a lot of things, the processor speed, and so forth. And will that be interactive? And usually it is.
user input sliders. The most games have a slider for volume for music, mm-hmm. for sounds, and for dialogue.
Yep.
And I could totally screw it up so yeah. that I can't hear something or whatever.
Right.
Do you say if I turn the music off now, all the dialogue is much louder? Do you do that for me, or do I?
Yeah, that's a great question. Normally, I try to set it. I try to not give the user too many sliders, mm-hmm. because you can get crazy with the slider. I mean, I've seen games where you have, you've got like 8 sliders going on, and do you want 5.1, 7.1? Do you want stereo? Do you want do you want a tin can sound? You can get just crazy with it, and then if the user's tinkering, you're playing with it, and you're tinkering, you did something, you don't know what you did, you restored defaults, you can't understand why, you turn the ambience down, but there's still a rooster crowing over here. You're like, what the heck? I don't understand. I hate that rooster too. And so I try to keep it really simple with the 3 components: music, sound, and dialogue. I try to get as even a balance as I can, listening on as many different speaker arrays as I can. The goal being the mid-range consumer speaker or PC speakers. If it sounds good there, and I know there aren't any weird anomalies on the higher-end speakers, probably going to be okay. But I tend to set a percentage preset, like a little script, when you first open the game. So the music may be 30%. The sound would be, 100%. And the dialogue might be like 70%. And that's just so you have some room to move things around. I like to have the music kind of in the background, because a lot of people, they may want to crank it. Other people may just end up muting it, but it's nice to just have it kind of in the background, because you're allowed to hear like a lot of the environment around you. So 3 sliders, that's it, preset, is usually a good, for me, I definitely prefer that over the million sliders, or the one that just says sound, yeah. it's just like on, off, which is just abhorrent. So I've just told you about all this stuff, and keeping it real, as Randy Jackson would say, you gotta keep it real, and we'd all love to have, musically, we want to have the biggest orchestra we can, and we want, like the Elder Scrolls Oblivion, we want to have Patrick Stewart as the voice of the Emperor, and all this great stuff, and I got 2 years to create it, and $50,000 of sound effect libraries, and the greatest digital audio console I can buy, and 20 people all working. I've got one person just working on the sound of water. I've got one person just working on the sound of footsteps, and I've got 5 programmers at my disposal, and a giant Foley sound stage for all my manually created sound effects. Probably not going to happen. The reason being, it does happen, and it's great when it does, but the reality is the gaming industry is a deadline-driven business, and like any business, it's about time and money. And so a lot of times you have to get kind of scrappy in terms of, you have to really prioritize what is going to need the most investment in which places, and often it's as few personnel as you can possibly get away with, doing as much as they possibly can, but everyone's passion usually drives it to places we didn't even know we were capable of, and things always seem to turn out okay. But the point here is that you've got to always think about the time you have, the equipment you have, and work with what you've got a lot of times. Sometimes, yeah. In the case of expansion packs, it could be just a matter of a few weeks in one person, because you have a team of, say, 100 people, and we've got to keep making games and looking ahead at the next game. So we need that kind of bulk of the personnel, say, 80 people, working on the next project. Well, we need an expansion pack for that previous project so we can keep making some residual income. We have this tiny team working on this small project, but it still may be demanding in terms of the scope, big scripts and lots of dialogue for the audio guy. And so I'm basically doing often, still a huge chunk of work, and I have very little time to do it. That's when sometimes we end up outsourcing and things like that. But it's a challenge. It's always a challenge. And that's something that the industry, I think, is currently wrestling with in terms of dealing with budgets and personnel and things like that. A lot of the expansion packs tend to be outsourced because they want to you know, the technology is already in place for that game. So if you can give that to an external company that can do it for less, and you give them a keen kind of instruction set of guidelines to work with, they'll usually deliver the goods, we hope. So let me give you a specific example of Children of the Nile. Now, I used Children of the Nile as a little case study here. There's a little snapshot of the screenshot with some little sound effects there and some people talking. We used the Miles engine for this, and this was started way back in, like, I think it was 2002, and we released the game in 2004. We just re-released it in 2008 with some new bells and whistles.
Can you tell us about the game?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Children of the Nile is in the style of kind of originally was in the style of Sim City, where you have a city simulator. You're starting in ancient Egypt, and you just have raw materials to work with, clay, sand, and papyrus from reeds. You have to gather reeds and farming and for grain and so forth. And you have to take all these resources and build a society with them. And the people in the game, which is interesting, is that it's kind of a bit of a society simulation, in that people have minds of their own. They're all little brains walking around and worried about their station in life, or the happiness factor. Are they paying a lot of taxes? Are they happy with the amount of goods they have? There are people who make common goods such as pottery and things like that, and there are other the nobles who may have want luxury goods, exotic goods from other lands that you have to have shipping lines for, and all that. So the goal is, you are the pharaoh, kind of this omnipotent player, and you're kind of creating this world that you want from scratch, and they build it, and as you go, you kind of steer them this way and that. But ultimately, they're all individuals, and they will, after a while, just kind of do what they think is best. And you play it, again, as an omnipotent kind of pharaoh, over a period of ages, if you want. It could be thousands of years. So, does that...
Yeah, no,
okay, great. Oh, yeah, sure. The most important thing to think about with the audio engine, and I come across this time and time again, when I talk about the engines, is that ultimately we want to create an engine that suspends your disbelief. We want somebody to say, okay, I get it, I believe this. The music, the sound, the voice, I'm not gonna focus on that anymore. I'm going to just play the game. And when that happens, the hope is that the player bought it. Yes. Oh, okay. Thank you. And they'll be pulled in to this world, and they'll accept what they hear. And by doing that, you've served the game first. This is so critical. A lot of times we want to do really cool things, bells and whistles in the game, and well, this is great new technology I want to use, and it's fantastic, but does it serve the game? And you always have to think of that. The only thing I could talk about in the lecture would be to serve the game first, because that ultimately the final place where this audio is going to go. And we want it to be as effective and as convincing as possible. I'm going to have to speed this up a little bit. There are a bunch of layers in Children of the Nile. There was an ambient layer, which is your environmental sounds. Figures, which do all kinds of actions. They may be outside their building, working on pottery or hammering some furniture together. There are buildings that emanate sounds that may, just generate. A temple may have somebody, hitting a gong in the background or shaking some chimes. The user interface has its own sounds, dialogue, obviously, and music, and any cinematics, which are like the cutscenes in the game. The intro, if you win or lose the game, maybe a video. And that's kind of a whole world in itself. I won't be able to spend a lot of time on this, but basically this is a little chart here that shows you that the ambience, I needed to have some custom code for this. I wanted it to change depending on the time of day. You may not hear the same birds chirping in the evening that you hear in the afternoon or the day, and that could apply to any types of sound and any types of terrain. So in the mountains, you may only hear, or the rocky areas, you would only hear certain sounds. A river, you'd constantly hear the stream, obviously. In the woods or trees, you might hear some different sounds and so forth. Each figure had its own set of sounds, and for a little bit of variability, I created varieties of Foley sounds. So I was actually doing the actions of this person who's the brickmaker, for example. There are several figures in the game, and I would have to find sounds that seemed convincing, and I would watch the video in a voice booth in real time, and I'd create certain sounds, and then I'd edit them all together. So for the brickmaker, he's scooping the mixture here. Let me just click on this. Sounds disgusting. It's supposed to be really wet mud. Four different varieties of that. Placing the mud in a box. I don't even want to tell you how I made these sounds. Dragging the board across the a box there, and then dropping the board on the ground. Now, if you heard the same 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D sounds over and over again, it would drive you mad. But having a little bit of variability in there makes it feel less predictable. And if you multiply this out by every single person on the screen working and doing their thing, you can kind of say, okay, I'm not hearing the same exact sound necessarily over and over. And I might tinker by moving them back one way or the other by one frame for a little bit of variability. Just to make it seem a little more convincing. Bearing in mind that these are a lot of sounds, and if I multiply this times dozens of figures, you know, what's the compromise there? The buildings had their own sounds. Just real quick, this is just a temple here. And they could be generated at random. It would just provide feedback and tell the player that this building is active. There are people in here doing something. It's not just sitting there. It's being staffed by somebody. And there were about 180 sounds shared across 85 buildings there. The same principle applied. I used an ambience for buildings where you may not hear people in the bakery, for example, working in the evening as much as you would hear it in the daytime. There are all types. There's military sounds, work camps, law and government, scribes, that people who would do taxes, luxury shops, and so forth. So there was a lot of scaling of sounds, kind of getting really busy in the day, and then kind of going off to the distance at night a little bit. Yes?
So if I plop down a whole, like, five or six brickmakers,
yeah.
How does that scale? Does it get louder?
Well, I'm actually going to get to that. I'll answer that in like two minutes tops. So the user interface, I'll just fly through this, is what we also call the front end, has its own sounds, just a bunch of different button sounds. Whoops. And they're kind of these kind of glassy, kind of a little bit organic effects, because we have a little scarab beetle interface there, and it's a little kind of 1920s inspired. Deco-inspired kind of interface. So I made some sounds to accommodate that kind of look. The dialogue, which is very complex, basically there would be spontaneous dialogue occurring of two people walking down the street and they saw each other. At a certain random interval of time, I created a situation where the code would select a figure on a screen, have them say something, possibly, and depending on the circumstances, the other person would reply. It could either be just something humorous, or it could be something that provides feedback, like, gee, I wish there was more food in this town. You got that one right, and so forth. Or it may just be hello or good evening. It's also dependent on time. So there were three classes of people, lower, middle, and upper class, pretty cut and dry society in Egypt. And so if you had a lower class child walking down the street and he said,
there ought to be a law against keeping a kid in an onion patch in this heat.
Then the response could be whoever it is walking by may or may not say something. Maybe it's a middle-class female.
Uh-huh. I'm with you.
Or maybe an upper-class male is walking down the street.
No matter how you slice it, we have done well for ourselves.
And the lower-class child could say,
no way.
Because, you know, I don't think so. Things may not be so good for the lower-class child. In all, there are about 1,600 clips across, we only did five languages, so about 8,000 files to manage there. All kinds of folks. And the music, all the different modes of music. There was a main menu, which is also called, again, the front end. The scenarios, which are kind of the intros to the level you're about to play. We just play one of those.
Your tomb shall bear witness to your greatness and shall be the most magnificent monument the world has ever seen. A pyramid to stand for all eternity.
Or maybe it's something just kind of playing the game, you know, doing your own thing and just kind of moving around in the background. Maybe it's something a little more organic. And when you win the game, oh, you want to hear Cities Attacked? All right. This is when you have raiders. You may have the Bedouins coming in or the Phoenicians coming in to attack the city. And it's just more urgency. I'll just let this play. So my big introduction for five. Big introduction for the sound categories to answer your question about is it going to get loud or not. There are only so many sounds we think should be played at a certain time because of the processing speed of the computer. If we want to sell a lot of games, we want to accommodate as large a window of families of computers as we can. So we have very relaxed conditions for that. And as such, we don't want to have a lot of sound channels, in relation to everything else. So I capped it off at 16 maximum channels at a time. And so there are all the different layers I talked about have different priorities. Music is a top priority because you don't want it to just cut out. So there's two sounds, left and right channel, that have to be there all the time. The maximum number of channels is two. The priority is one. Ambience should always be there. You don't want the rug ripped out from under you if you're hearing this pleasant stereo ambience of a forest or something. So that's going to be a high priority. I could have up to two stereo tracks for a total of four channels, and that's a darn high priority at two. And the UI is pretty important. Other means there are little bells for little events or pop-up messages that would come up. Not as important. The dialogue, you could take it or leave it. If we didn't have room, it's okay. It was very occasional conversational type of thing. Buildings didn't always need a lot of sounds because if there are any spare sounds, you'll only ever hear probably a couple of them, which would answer your question. So you don't have this cacophony in a certain layer. We can cap it off at whatever we want. And we had to do this from scratch. Miles doesn't provide this, but the newer, the Wise, and also Exact, and FMod, and possibly the Unreal Engine, do have some of this layering information that you can have. It varies from platform to engine to engine. But we had to create this from scratch. The cinematics, real quick, there are storyboards that have to come together for the intro. I look at these with the designer, with the artist rather, and talk about the designer, what things we want to feature, talking about the game. Here we have a bird flying through Egypt, and as the bird flies through the bird's eye view, we kind of see these different scenes as the falcon passes over different areas of Egypt, and you get kind of a quick taste of what the game would be all about. Sometimes I just have here, Adam doesn't have anything for me, so I just have to use my imagination for a training ground shot for the military. This is not uncommon to have a kind of an incomplete storyboard. Real quick, show you what an animatic looks like. An animatic is, before we actually go ahead and spend all the time and resources on making a movie, we want to take that storyboard and animate it real quick in low res just to see if we're not crazy. This is just the hot sun. This is the most basic low res demo we can get with some time code at the bottom. This is a falcon flying over a wasteland, but as he comes over the edge, we see ancient Egypt in all its glory. Does this feel right? We talk about it. We talk about the pacing. We make necessary changes. And then once we commit this to it, we can go ahead and go with the full-fledged movie, which I'll just give you a quick demonstration of here. Cap it off at like 20, 30 seconds. So I threw the logo in. It's our little logo. So there's that sun again. You can see we've, you know, the textures have been polished. So this is what it ends up being.
Awaken and stand, for you, golden light, have upraised the sleepers. Bathed are their bodies who dress in clean linen, their arms held high to praise your return.
I have to cut it short. But that's the general idea of working with the cinematics as a layer of one of the responsibilities of being the audio director and having the engine play that at a scripted time in the game. And one last quick thing, getting organized. Yeah, I can't stress this enough. I'm using the case of napkins, post-its, and gum wrappers as stationery don't count because I have actually seen people do this and have been amazed, you know, after all, so many years. It's not a good thing. Sometimes in crunch mode, you're just trying to think on impulse, and if you don't have it together, you know, it's like going fishing and expecting to catch all these great fish and everything. You get all your lures there and everything, and you're going to cast your line, but you never took into consideration that, oh, I have to put these on the ground, now my fingers have dirt in them, and I don't have a tool to cut the fish, and you come home, and you're all stinky, and, you know, you got all kinds of problems. And if you planned ahead, and you know what to expect. We never really know what to expect, but if you can prepare for the worst, basically, you'll be in much better shape. And those thousands of things I talked about, once more, we can organize those into spreadsheets, databases, text files. A couple of the tools like FMOD and WISE provide this built-in, so I don't have to have lists that's already within the engine itself, providing the list for me. I often do something called an audio design document, which explains the scope of the goals of the audio, working with the artists and programmers, and all the things I just talked about, the layers. It's not something that I just write off and just say here, but it's more of something that's done incrementally, but is a permanent record of the process and can be referred back to later if necessary. And I just say here, label your CDs, sounds obvious, drives, flash RAM. It's the most obvious thing in the world, and you would be surprised to this day how many people don't do that. It's should just be considered a blank slate. If it's no good if it doesn't have a label on it. You should always keep a list of all your software, hardware ID numbers. There's always upgrades or things. You need to have all those. Keep your inventory of what's on and off site for equipment. And in closing, the best conversations sometimes happen in the hallway. You know, all these things, you should still keep an open mind about meetings and talking to people as you go on, because you never know what you'll uncover. And I just showed you a little bit of the intro earlier. I wanted to thank you for inviting me today. I'm sorry, I wish I had more time to talk, but I can definitely hang out if anyone wants to chat or have questions about anything. And once again, it's a real pleasure.